It's Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. Welcome in, I'm Steve Chiatakis. There is a good chance that you've heard about the massive traffic jam here in Los Angeles. And no, I'm not talking about the 405. The ports of LA and Long Beach handle more containers per ship than any other port complex in the world. And they're an absolute mess right now. There are dozens of cargo ships anchored off the coast. Dock workers are hustling 24/7 to try and whittle away at the backlog. The holidays are quickly approaching. Consumer confidence and spending is up, and that means a lot of the things you want to buy are not on the store shelves. Drive up into the heart of LA, and you can see how this seaside gridlock continues to affect business owners and their customers.
Mimi, are you available?
It's a design question. Okay, so then just
take Blick Art Materials. It's a family-owned art supply company with brick-and-mortar storefronts all across the country. Nina Foreman works at its Beverly location in central LA.
Shelves have been empty. I haven't seen anything in this row for like four or five months now. So it's been quite some time, and this is like it's a well-bought item. Like usually we're pretty in store with it.
There are shades of yellow paint that they can't keep stocked. The tubes they do have looked mismatched. And it's not just art stores dealing with shortages, lost shipping containers, and back-ordered merchandise. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb covers the business of Southern California and reports that many local businesses are feeling the effects and they're worried about the upcoming holidays. Hey, Ben.
Hey there, Steve.
I went to one of those warehouse, you know, the big, big warehouse stores, and they were out of paper towels. And so this, of course, harkens back to the early days of the pandemic when everybody was buying up paper towels and toilet paper. How widespread is this problem?
Yeah, well, Steve, the short answer is that we're only beginning to feel the effects of this issue. Let's go back to Blick's Beverly location. The store's assistant manager is a woman named Jennifer Williams, and she says they're having problems keeping some of their house-branded supplies on their shelves right now.
Where's our pack of our brush packs? Where's our foam brushes? And that was because they're being held over in the seas or over in the ocean or their containers or lost in one of the containers. So that has happened also.
Those are the questions that Williams is getting from her customers. And she says what she and other stores have been doing is trading amongst themselves, right? Asking if they got a product for a customer at a different location. But that can only go on for so long. And after a while, you're simply not going to have these things in stock. In fact, Blick's director of purchasing, Pamela McMillan, explained why that is.
As far as LA, so right now we have 58 containers in Long Beach that we're working on. We have out of stocks. I won't lie.
McMillan says there have been some other supply chain disruptions as well during the pandemic. For example, factory shutdowns overseas. You've had shortages of actual seagoing vessels. And also, of course, COVID protocols for moving goods from one country to another, one state to another. So they've done their best to stock up for back to school and looking ahead now for the holidays, but it might not be enough.
So you're talking about empty shelves at Blick, but also, you know, there are still products in these stores, too. I mean, is that what we're seeing for other industries as well?
You know, it really depends on what sector of the economy you're talking about. Blick is doing relatively well, but if you take the toy industry, for example, it's looking at some major problems heading into the holidays. For example, MGA Entertainment is a toy company in Chatsworth, and I caught up with CEO and founder Isaac Larian to talk about how many containers his multi-billion dollar company has sitting off the coast of LA right now.
God, I gave up counting because it's very depressing. I really did. I mean, as of last week, we had, I think, about 960. It goes up and down. We try to get a lot of them out. But even when you get them out now, Ben, it's too late to make it on the retail floor.
And that's because Steve Larian says about 65% of all toys are sold between October and December. So this is a major issue. In fact, he told me that if you're looking to buy a hot toy this holiday, he thinks you better do it before Black Friday. In December, he anticipates you're not going to be able to find a lot of that hot stuff. But Steve, you know what's really, really hard to buy right now?
Paper towels.
Perhaps. How about a couch, Steve? Everyone has been trapped at home, wants new furniture, maybe a new coffee table. And so if you have an interior design business like John DeBastiani has, you're going to have to tell your clients about some really long wait times. In fact, I asked him what's been the hardest things for him to get.
For me, it's upholstery that's not made locally and also lighting. I waited for one little light fixture for 6 months for something, you know, and that's typically not the case. And they, you know, they're just telling me, well, there's all these freighters up the coast of LA, so we don't have it. So it's like, okay.
There's another impact of this, Steve. DeBastiani says that all the things that he sells and tries to bill for his clients, well, they become so much more expensive because of this.
You know, inflation right now is so great. The price of wood has doubled. The price of metal has doubled. And it's taking a lot longer, even domestically, even things that are made in LA. And that's been a lot because, you know, in some cases, some of my furniture that I made people has gone up 50%.
So people are paying higher prices for this stuff.
They absolutely are. Maybe you've noticed that too. And, you know, in the long term, I think what I've been hearing, especially from economists, is that's what we're going to see. People willing to, in fact, pay more for certain products. At least that's what Laura Gonzalez tells me. She's a professor of finance at Cal State University, Long Beach, and she pays attention to the port.
What we are going to see is greater demand for products that are not coming from overseas. Customers will be willing to pay a higher price for products that they can rely on.
In other words, Steve, you're going to pay a little bit more to get something from, say, South Carolina rather than China if you know it'll come when they say it's going to come. And it's just another example of the many changes we can expect to our daily lives and our behavior as a result of this pandemic.
So the commodity is knowing when it's coming and not having to wait, and that's going to cost you more.
That's right, Steve.
All right, KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb covering the business of Southern California. Benjamin, thanks.
Hey, anytime.
Well, the men and women tasked with getting those products off the cargo ships, into trucks, and ultimately to your doorstep are working around the clock to clear the backlog. Last week, President Joe Biden announced the Port of Los Angeles will be open 24/7 to relieve the pressure and get the supplies moving again.
That means an increase in the hours for workers to be moving cargo off ships onto trucks and rail cars to get to their destination.
The Port of Long Beach began doing that last month, but what gets said in Washington and what plays out on the ground are often two different things. Unclogging the bottleneck may be easier said than done. Here to give us the port and the workers' perspective is Danny Miranda. He heads the local chapter of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union. He's worked as a longshoreman himself for more than 40 years. Danny, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Where specifically do you work, and what's it been like these past months? Is it as congested as we're all hearing?
Yes, it's very much congested. We have now become a port that is a holding port, a storage facility instead of a throughput facility, which we have in the past. So we are inundated with a lot of cargo. We're moving as hard as we can and as fast as we can, and we continue to do that.
Are you at 24/7 yet? Is the schedule at 24/7 yet?
No, it takes time, I guess. No, they haven't. They haven't started yet. So, I've talked to our dispatch, and, you know, we're waiting. We're just waiting. It takes a little bit of time to get everything going, but it's been in our contract. We've been available to do it. We have plenty of workers to do it. There's no labor shortage. We're just ready to go. They just have to hire us.
And you have the workers to do this, right? You have the workers. Nobody's going to be working like, you know, whatever, 16-hour days or whatever it may be. I mean, you've got workers to do this.
Yeah, we're committed to working. We have been. They just have to hire us. We're ready to go.
What do you think caused this backup in the first place, Danny? I mean, have you ever seen anything like this?
Not to this extreme, no. Never in my time. You got to remember, there's three alliances out there control over 85% of all waterborne goods in the world. Three alliances. And what happened is those alliances became terminal operators. They're all foreign owned, and they are terminal operators. Before, we used to have an American terminal operators in this country. Now we don't. And they take their profits and take it overseas. So what they did is, as this e-commerce came into play, it's created this bottleneck where people are starting this on-time delivery of waterborne cargo. With the pandemic, China trying to get caught up. Their economy is going. There's no manufacturing in America anymore, is there?
Not much.
So I think the e-commerce section, backlog of kind of getting back full speed ahead and opening up their manufacturing, just putting it on our docks and make us a storage facility. We need to be a throughput port, not a storage facility.
LA is home to the busiest port in the Western Hemisphere. It's huge. 40% of all seaborne imports to the United States come through these ports. Why has this backlog been allowed to happen?
Well, you know, okay, so it's a supply chain, right? So we're only one part of that chain. And it's only as strong as its weakest link. So if the beneficial cargo owner isn't open at 1 o'clock in the morning, where are you going to take the cargo? They're not open to receive it. You know, all the big box stores, that's why the president asked them to help, to open up their doors at night so we can ship around the clock. Where are we going to go? Where are they going to go? You know, there's a lack of a lot of different things in that chain. There's a big clog, but it ain't us.
So if you have cargo coming into the port and it's got a lot of things going to, say, Home Depot or Walmart or Target or where, you know, these big box stores that you mentioned, and those places aren't open to have it distributed to them, then that's where part of the hangup is.
It sits on our docks. Like I said, instead of being a through port like we've always had, we're now a storage port because there's nowhere to go. There's stacked. They sit. It's cheaper for them to sit that ship out in the middle of the harbor than it is to put it on the dock because there's no one going to get it.
I would be honored if he were, but if President Biden were listening to you right now, what would you tell him? What would you say, sir? I want you to, this is how you're going to fix this, by doing this.
First of all, the president's done a fantastic job for us. And if I could talk to him and tell him, what I could say to him is we need to look at the carrier and ask them to control that flow of the cargo because they need to have the beneficial cargo to pick up the cargo. We're a storage port. We need more rail infrastructure. We need more railroad. We need more gondola cart to pick up the containers and move it by rail. Because we also got environmental issues as well, right? So you put more trucks on the road, it creates more of an environmental issue. So let's put it on a rail and get it out. That's what we're looking at. For us, I would tell them, can you help that railroad help us pick up? Because that's where we can move the cargo the fastest.
Well, President surely does love railroads. He was an Amtrak rider for many years, famously. I want to thank you for your time, for giving us a perspective, because there's so much. And, you know, it shines a light when you say that, Danny, when you're saying that we're no longer, it's not just a port, it's a storage area where just cargo containers are stacked, you know, yay high, in order to keep those products there until they can be distributed to places that will receive them. And I know that's a big reason, what you're saying, a big reason as to why we have this backup. Danny Miranda, the president of ILWU Local 94, the union that represents dock workers at the Port of LA and Long Beach and other areas across Southern California as well. Danny, thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
You guys take care. Thank you.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on with Greater LA on KCRW, Steve Chiotakis here. We are talking today about all those things and the boxes stacked inside those cargo ships. Part of the reason for the pileup at the ports is that people have been buying so much stuff, which of course begs the question, why do you buy the things you buy.
How much is this?
I don't think this would fit you.
Well, I didn't ask if it would fit. I asked how much it was.
How much is this, Marie?
It's very expensive.
It's very expensive.
Look, I got money to spend in here.
I don't think we have anything for you. You're obviously in the wrong place.
But maybe you buy other things, cheaper things than in that scene in Pretty Woman. A treat for yourself after doing well on a test, or maybe something after you get a promotion. Maybe you just like shopping. And by the way, it's okay. No judgment here. Believe me, no judgment. There are psychological and sociological forces at work in shopping. And we have just the guy to talk about it. Omar Lizardo is a professor of sociology at UCLA. And one of the things he specializes in is consumption. Professor, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
So when I see pictures of cargo ship after cargo ship just waiting in line to make it to the ports of L.A. or Long Beach, I just think that's a lot of stuff coming from Asia, coming from China, and we sure do buy a lot of stuff. Has it always been this way in America?
Well, it has certainly been this way for a long time. In fact, many believe that the success of the American economy has always been built on this idea of consumption, and some sociologists called the U.S. and societies like the U.S. consumer societies, because so much of the economy is driven by consumer demand for products, right? And even the it's kind of all feeds into one another, because consumer demand for things then feeds into people's motivation to become entrepreneurs or to invent new things. So there's invention feeds into new products, and that kind of keeps everything going.
Talk a little bit, Professor, about the sociology of buying and the psychology of it. I mean, is it if I have a lot of material things, I'll be better than the other guy? Or is it, okay, I have this money, so I'm going to spend it. The old it's burning a hole in my pocket line. I mean, there's a lot of psychology there, a lot of behavioral stuff.
Yes, and there are different schools of thought in terms of, what is the fundamental motivation for people to consume. You kind of mentioned one of them, that it's a popular idea, this idea that it's competitive consumption. In other words, you see your neighbor buys a new car, buys a new gadget, and then you want to have it. Essentially, it becomes a way of people expressing the idea that, I am the same as, if somebody that I compare myself to has something, consumes something, then I buy the same thing as a way of signaling that we are in the same status, right? And of course, then the counterpart to that is that a lot of consumption is to become different from. In other words, you consume something or you grab a consumer good to say, I am different from the people who cannot, let's say, afford this, or can't appreciate it in the way that I do. So there's both an idea of a motivation for consumption to belong, but also motivation of consumption to differentiate, right?
There is also a movement, an anti-consumerism movement out there. There was a book and a documentary a few years back called Affluenza that talked about consumerism. And consumerism is a problem in the United States, in American society. Do you see it that way?
Yes and no. In other words, there are aspects of the consumer society, and in fact, even when people use the term consumerism, they're already kind of signaling that they're framing consumption as an issue or a problem. So there are aspects that are problematic, right? I think that the most compelling case has been made for excessive consumption in terms of its effect on other things, like, let's say, the environment, right? Because in order for you to have a lot of consumer goods, you have to use energy and products, etc., and that can have adverse environmental effects. So some people say, the excessive consumption, why do you need 5 TVs or 3 cars, etc., when you can live with 1 television and 1 car, right? And then, and insofar as then that, means that you're using excess energy, excess resources, and then that can have an adverse environmental effect. And I think that is a side effect of consumption that can be negative. Some people do point to psychological, and then, as you said, other social issues like that. But the one thing that sometimes just framing consumerism as a negative, for I think that it hides the positive aspects of consumption. So consumption does have the positive aspects, inclusive of the positive aspect of keeping the economy going, which we all benefit from. But also, I think, positive aspects for people, right? I think that I think it's a mistake to see consumption and consumption of goods as purely being driven by individual or egoistic motives, or even by competitive motives. A lot of times, people consume because they want to gift, something to other people. So a lot of consumption is also driven by the need that people have to keep social relations going, and a primary way in which we do that is by essentially exchanging gifts and things with other people or experiences with others. And I think that that's a positive aspect of consumption because it is one of the ways that people use consumer goods to connect with others. So it's not just about, I think, of just consuming in an egoistic way just for your own pleasure.
Omar Lizardo, professor of sociology at UCLA, who emphasizes on consumption, consumer habits when it comes to the study of human behavior. Professor, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Yes, thanks for having me.
I'm joined now by Sonia Lubomirsky. She's a psychology professor at UC Riverside, and she studies happiness. And when we talk about happiness and buying happiness, and let's chat a little bit about what that means. Professor, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here to talk about happiness and buying.
Well, I mean, and let's go there. I mean, can you? I know there are studies that show that the happiness that you can buy is only temporary. It's just for a short time that you buy something, you get the gratification from buying it, you use it for a little while, and then it's over, right? That excitement.
Well, that's exactly right. The problem with having materialistic goals, which is trying to be happy by buying stuff, is that those kinds of goals are never really satiated, right? Because you buy something and then you want more. You buy a bag or a car or, an iPhone, and then you want to upgrade and you want the next thing. So it's never quite satiated. And so research, lots of studies show that people who try to buy happiness, people who sort of buy things or are more materialistic, are actually less happy.
And it's really a problem because if you don't have the money to buy that happiness, right, to buy those things that you think will make you happy, you're going to put it on time, right? You're going to put it on credit. And then maybe that's a credit card that you can't pay later on or something like that.
Right. Again, not surprisingly, debt makes people unhappy, or is it related to unhappiness? If you have some money or if you have a lot of money, it's actually more happiness producing to spend that money on experiences as opposed to things or possessions. And so people who tend to spend their money on things that they put in their closets or on their walls or in their garages tend not to be as happy as those who spend their money on experiences like, having dinner with friends or going on vacation.
What else? I mean, what are there other things that your research shows that can make people happier than just spending money on things that perhaps you don't need?
Research and theory in psychological science suggest that there's sort of three ways that we could spend our money to make us happy. The first is we spend our money on connecting with others. So that could be paying for a dinner or vacation that we spend with family or friends. The second is spending our money on personal growth. So that would be maybe taking cooking classes or doing something with your hands. And the third is spending your money in a way that contributes to society or to your community, so philanthropy or somehow helping others. So those three ways of spending money are associated with the most happiness, and that's really lies in contrast with spending money on sort of buying stuff and buying more material possessions.
What do you recommend people do to overcome that impulse to buy those things? Like if you want to go buy that handbag that you really don't need.
One of the best kind of antidotes for wanting to spend things or for sort of materialistic impulses, I would say, is gratitude. Because when you express gratitude, you're essentially focusing on the things that you have as opposed to more stuff that you want. And so research shows that people who kind of express gratitude on a regular basis for the good things in their lives are happier and feel more connected. And I would speculate are sort of less in searching of ways to buy more happiness because they're more satisfied with what they already have.
And maybe those are intangible things. Maybe it's not a television or a new car. It could be, hey, look at these beautiful people in my life. Look at, my family that I'm so grateful for.
Exactly.
Sonia Lubomirsky, psychology professor over at UC Riverside. Professor, thanks.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
That's it for today. Tomorrow, the COVID pandemic taught us a lot about the importance of nutrition and the people who are least healthy being the most vulnerable to the virus. Hear about one way the government, state and federal governments, are trying to address that nutrition gap. That's tomorrow with a new episode of Greater LA. Join us anytime at kcrw.com/greaterLA. That's kcrw.com/GLA. Share your thoughts, how you're doing. Subscribe to the podcast, too. And get the show delivered fresh to your feed every day. kcrw.com/GLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all helped put the show together this evening. I'm Steve Chiantakis. Thanks for your ears and for your time and attention tonight. Have a great night.